Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. In December of last year, our podcast series featured what we thought was the last recording we had of the Edward D. Hoke radio plays produced by Dave Amaral back in the 1970s. But recently we discovered a previously unposted play hiding in a folder on our server. We're delighted to be able to present it to you this month. In this episode of the series, which stars the Hoke character Dr. Sam Hawthorne, the New England country doctor solves a murder that appears to have unearthly origins.
Dr. Sam, do you know what you're saying? You're saying that he was killed by a ghost.
No, what I'm saying is even more fantastic than that. He didn't die within the last half hour. He's been dead for probably 15 to 20 hours.
But that's impossible. We just saw him come in here.
I know. It wasn't a ghost that killed him, but it certainly seems to be a ghost that walked into this room tonight.
It's always a pleasure to visit Dr. Sam Hawthorne, retired general practitioner, and listen to one of his impossible crimes of the past, one of his miracle problems. This one concerns a 70-year-old haunted house that whispers, and a secret room from which no one who has entered has ever returned. Dr. Sam calls it The Problem of the Whispering House.
Well, hello there. It's nice to have you back again. Yes, yes. Let's see now. This time, I promised to tell you a story about a real haunted house, didn't I? Well, that's what it's gonna be. It happened back in February of 1928, and it came darn close to being the last case, either medical or mysterious, that I ever handled. But first, I'd better tell you about the ghost hunter. His name was Thaddeus Sloan. And I expected to meet a gray-bearded old professor with thick spectacles and a cane. Instead, I found him to be a man in his mid-30s.
I suppose you know why I'm here in Northmont.
Well, I can't really say. Some years back, there was talk that the bandstand in the park was haunted, and it turned out to be a human spook.
No, I'm interested in the old Briar House. A Boston newspaper recently ran a Sunday feature on the place that was most interesting.
Yes, I saw the article.
Well, I'd like to investigate the place. Tell me, is it true that the house whispers? And that it contains a secret room that no one has ever come out of?
To tell you the truth, I've never been inside the Briar place. It's been empty for as long as I've lived in Northmont.
Oh, but surely you've heard the legends.
It was just an old empty house to me, till I read that feature in the Boston paper.
Oh. Dr. Sam, I believe that you're the only one that can help me.
How's that?
Well, to begin with, I need someone who knows the area to act as a guide. Now, I intend to spend a night in the old Briar House, and I'd like you to be there as a witness.
Ghost hunting is a little out of my line. Ghosts don't need doctors. Excuse me. Dr. Hawthorne speaking. See if you can put a tourniquet around his leg. And I'll be right out, Mrs. Andrews. You can come along with me if you like, Thad. You'll see how a country doctor practices. And Mrs. Andrews lives just down the road from the Briar place.
Oh, fine. I'm all set.
He followed me out, and we climbed into my 7-year-old yellow Pierce Aero runabout. We took the north road out to the Andrews farm, and Mrs. Andrews hurried out to meet me. I found Billy lying on the barn floor, a crude tourniquet tightened around his left leg.
Oh.
His bloodied coveralls had been torn away from the wound.
I'm so glad you came, Dr. Sam. Billy's still bleeding pretty bad. Landed right on that pitchfork, he did.
Don't you worry, Mrs. Andrews. It's not so bad. The bleeding helped cleanse the wounds.
I was forking hay down for the cows when I lost my footing and fell. Darn fork went clear through me.
Well, it could have been a lot worse. Hold still now, Billy. I'm going to give you a little painkiller. Then I'll stitch up your leg. There's no point in moving you up to the house till I have you patched up.
You sure he'll be all right? He's the only man the place has got.
It'll be painful for a few days, but there's no serious damage.
The Mr. Up and Dying with that heart attack last year sure gave us a setback.
Your husband was a carnival man, wasn't he, Mrs. Andrews?
20 years we worked the carny just to buy this place.
I know it hasn't been easy. Oh, Mrs. Andrews, say hello to Mr. Thaddeus Sloan. He's a ghost hunter.
A ghost hunter?
Mrs. Andrews, I've come to Northmont to see the old Briar House.
Oh, there's no ghost in there. Them's just stories the old folks like to tell.
Is that the Briar place out across the field?
That's it.
I'll get you there as soon as I finish with Billy here.
Mrs. Andrews, do I understand you to say that you've never noticed anything strange out there? No odd lights at night or any whispering noises?
Not me. Billy used to play around there when he was a boy. Billy, you ever hear the Briar House whispering to you?
I never heard a sound except once I found some hobos camped there. They chased me clear across the field.
Come on now, Billy. Let me help you up.
Okay, Doc.
Just keep the weight off of that leg, and you'll be okay. We'll get you up to the house. You'll be back in shape in no time.
I can't thank you enough for coming right out, Dr. Sam.
Up at the house, we got Billy into bed, and I told him to stay put. Sloan and I climbed back into the car and headed down the bumpy dirt road to the Briar place. From the outside, it appeared in good shape. For its 70 years, the shuttered windows seemed undisturbed. And, though the gray paint was faded, there was little sign of peeling.
There is something dismal looking about the place, isn't
there? I don't suppose we can get in.
I mean, can if the lock's working. I got a key from the real estate man in Boston.
You're serious about spending the night here, aren't you?
Certainly.
If the place is for sale, does it mean the last of the Briar family is dead?
Well, there are some cousins, but they want to get rid of it.
He stepped into the center of the room with a piece of chalk in his hand and drew a large circle on the wooden floor. Within the circle, he drew a five-pointed star.
You see, Dr. Sam, there are certain procedures that must be followed. You know, some ghost hunters seal the doors and windows with seven human hairs. And wear a necklace of garlic. You know, I don't go quite that far. But I do bring along a revolver.
For a ghost?
Just a precaution.
Why the chalk star?
It's a pinnacle. You're said to be safe if you're standing inside of it.
A revolver and a pinnacle. You are ready for anything. What else did you bring?
A camera and a flash gun that I mount on a tripod. If a ghost comes here tonight, we'll be ready for it.
It was about midnight when we first heard the whispering. At first, I thought it was the wind stirring through the upper part of the house. But soon, it took on the sound of speech.
Did you hear that?
I heard something.
Listen.
It's some sort of trickery. Somebody's trying to fool us.
Come on, let's have a look.
What do you think? Upstairs?
That's a good idea. Let's take a look up there.
We went quickly up the front stairs and paused to listen once more. Now, there seemed to be just the wind blowing outside the house. We heard no sound of whispering. Then, suddenly, the downstairs door opened, and Sloan signaled for me to hide. I stepped into one of the open rooms. Someone was coming up the stairs. I saw the glow of a lantern, and then I saw him, a thin, bearded man, not too tall, wearing a shabby winter coat and fur hat. He moved quickly but carefully, holding the lantern high to light his way. He walked to the end of the hall, where a blank wall faced him, and touched a spot in the frame of an adjoining doorway. Immediately there was a click, and when he pushed the wall, it swung open before him. It was the first time I'd ever seen a real secret panel in operation. The hidden door slid closed behind him, and the upper hallway was once more plunged into darkness. I waited a moment, and then stepped back into the hall.
Did you see that?
Yes. What do you think?
I think we found our secret room.
The room no one ever comes out of.
Well, no soon enough. He went in and he hasn't come out yet.
We waited for what seemed an eternity, though it was no more than a half hour. At any moment, we were prepared to leap back into our hiding places should the secret panel open. But it remained closed. Finally, after midnight...
I'm going downstairs for the camera. Let's open this darn thing and confront him.
There's always the possibility of another exit.
But where would it lead to? No, if he'd have come out on this floor, we'd have seen him. I'm going down for my camera. All right, we're ready for him. Do you remember what he pushed to open this?
I think it's this loose piece of molding.
Okay, now I'll face it so it points at the wall. Now, put some extra flash powder in. All right, I'm ready. Open it.
I wonder if we'll find a startled man or an empty room.
Watch your eyes, Dr. Sam.
The man's still there, seated at a table.
Our appearance doesn't seem to startle him. I think he's dead.
Yes, he's been stabbed. There's a hunting knife in his left side. And here's something. A .22 caliber automatic. Apparently it slipped from his fingers.
But there's no hiding place, no way out of here.
Exactly.
Do you know what you're saying, Dr. Sam? You're saying that he was killed by a ghost.
No. What I'm saying is even more fantastic than that. This body is already cold. He didn't die within the last half hour. He's been dead for 15 or 20 hours.
That's impossible. We just saw him come in here.
Yes, I know. It wasn't a ghost that killed him. But it certainly seems to have been a ghost that walked into this room tonight.
We could do little more that night. In the morning, I was barely awake when Sheriff Lenz was at my door with some news.
Well, Doc, the coroner backs you up. Says he died sometime between 3 and 9 yesterday morning. But there's something else, too. The dead man's beard is false.
What?
It was a fake beard, all right. Glued on his face with spirit gum, like actors use. What do you make of that, Doc?
I'm just surprised that I didn't realize it. Did anyone recognize him with the beard off?
Well, he kind of looked familiar to me. Now, I wouldn't want to swear to it, but I think I've seen him hanging around town.
When he passed us in the hall, I thought he seemed familiar, too.
You still holding on to that ghost story of yours?
I'm only telling you what we saw.
How about telling me how you could see a dead man walking?
There was only one thing to do. I went back to the Briar House alone and started all over again. I parked out on the road as I'd done before, walked up the driveway. I went around to the back of the house, not really knowing what I expected to find. It was a drain pipe in the rear that finally caught my attention. The spout at the bottom was curved out about 2 feet above the ground, and there was something about it that reminded me of the mouthpiece for a large trumpet.
Back to the scene of the crime?
Thaddeus, you startled me.
What brings you back here?
I think I found something. Do you still have a key to the front door?
Yeah, I got it right here.
Now go inside and stand where we were standing last night. I want to try an experiment.
Okay, maybe we're getting somewhere. I'll wave to you through the window when I get inside.
I waited until I could see him moving in the window above the drain spout. Then I tried calling through it.
Hello.
He signaled that he heard. Then I lowered my voice to a harsh whisper.
Be gone. Be gone from here.
He hurried over and opened the window.
That's it, Dr. Sam. The Whispering House. How'd you know?
Just a guess. Our ghost last night entered the house right after we heard the whispering. That made me think there was some way of causing it from the outside. I just saw the drain pipe and wanted to try it.
But how could he have called into the drain pipe, opened the door, walked upstairs in the secret room if he'd been stabbed to death a day earlier?
If the man we saw was the murderer, disguised as the victim, it would explain a lot.
It wouldn't explain how he got out of the secret room.
No, it wouldn't.
I like the idea of a ghost much better. I wish you'd have got a picture of him walking.
Did you develop the photograph of the room and the body?
Yes, I brought it. Here it is, but it doesn't help.
A photograph helped me solve an election day mystery. But this doesn't show much. Body at the table and a solid wall behind. That's all. I'm going back to the office. You come in?
No, I want to look around some more.
I walked out to the road and climbed into my runabout. I was just starting it when something happened. There was a sputtering from under the hood. Then a sheet of flame shot up, and suddenly the whole car was on fire. Somehow I managed to jump free and smother the few flames that had clung to my clothing. But the car was a total loss. There was nothing I could do to save it.
Dr. Sam, what happened? Your car.
I don't know. I was lucky to get out.
I can drive you back to town.
No. I want Sheriff Lenz to look at this. I'm going down to the Andrews house to call him.
More trouble, Dr. Sam? Your clothes are all burnt.
Her car caught fire. I want to phone the sheriff, if I may.
Go right ahead.
How's Billy's leg coming along?
Slowly. I wish you'd have a look at it while you're here.
Billy Andrews was up in his room, trying to limp around as best as he could. I saw at once that his stitches were inflamed, but that didn't bother me.
I'm feeling better, Dr. Sam.
You should be in bed. One day is too soon to be up on that leg.
Oh, but I feel so helpless when this chore is to be done. Mom, I can't do everything.
You just get back in bed and let me put some salve on those stitches. Otherwise, I'll send you to the hospital where you belong.
You don't look much better than me, Doc. What happened?
Car burnt up.
Not your runabout.
I needed a new one anyway. Hated to see it go like that, though. Oh,
gee, that's a shame, Doc.
That was meant to cook your hide, Doc. Somebody hit a can of gasoline under the hood with a rag leading to the spark plugs. It was like a crude bomb.
I suspected something like that.
You got any enemies around here, Doc?
The only enemy I've got is the person who killed our unknown man yesterday.
I do have some news for you, Doc. I got a call this morning from the state police. They managed to identify the dead man.
Oh? Who was he?
Fella named George Gifford. He was involved in some frauds during the Florida land boom a few years back. A grand jury indicted him, and the trial was still pending. He was free on bail.
So, he was a land promoter.
The state police say he was always selling non-existent oil wells or phony gold mines to somebody.
I wonder what brought him to the Briar place.
Well, I got the answer to that one, too. I called the Boston paper about the article they ran. The reporter says it was Gifford that gave him the information for the article.
I see.
And he says he remembers Thad Sloan coming in and asking about it, too. They say the article has caused a lot of grief.
How's that?
Well, the family was trying to sell the place, and they claimed a story spoiled the deal. People just don't like ghosts. That's why the owners hired Sloan.
Sloan works for the owners? Are you sure?
Sure, I'm sure. They hired him to chase away the ghost or whatever it was. And he promised to give the paper the exclusive story on it.
Late that afternoon, I called Sloan and told him I was going back to the Briar house. It was time I confronted the ghost. He picked me up, and it was already dark by the time we got there. A chill was in the February night air. Sloan unlocked the door, and I followed him inside and up the stairs to the hidden room.
You know, those legends about a room no one ever comes out of must have some basis in fact. There must be another way out of there.
That's right. No one comes out because there's another exit, and I'm going to find it.
How?
I'm going in there.
Can I come with you?
Then who would let me out if I don't find the other exit?
I guess you're right. Okay, I'll wait here.
The panel swung shut behind me, and I was alone in a room without an exit. I set the lantern I'd brought along on the table and went to work on the walls first. They were all solid, but the back wall was more solid than the rest. I wondered why. And then I remembered that the fireplace would be somewhere below me. This solid stone wall would be the side of the chimney running up through the center of the house. I tried all of the walls without success. And the wooden floor was just as solid. The one place I hadn't touched was the ceiling. I climbed up on the table and found that it was as solid as it looked, even where the paint had chipped away here and there. I climbed down and sat on the chair, as George Gifford had done. The killer had left this room without using the sliding panel. I couldn't be wrong about that. My pocket watch showed that the half hour was up. I pounded on the locked panel to signal Thad Sloan for my release. Nothing happened. I pounded louder, but nobody came. And I put myself into the hands of a killer who'd already tried to burn me to death. If Sloan wasn't in league with the killer, what had happened to him? I stared at the blank, solid walls, looking for a way out that didn't exist, growing more frightened by the minute. I'd been in here for close to 45 minutes, yet the air still seemed fresh and the lantern burned brightly. The room was not as tightly sealed as it seemed. I removed the glass from the lantern, and the flame immediately began to flicker. Air was coming up from between the wooden floorboards. I bent to examine the floor once more and noticed some gouges that could have been caused by the point of a knife. A few looked recent, but many seemed quite old. I took a penknife from my pocket and jabbed it into the floorboard that seemed to have the most gouges. I tried sliding the board toward the chimney wall. It moved. I tried a second, and then a third. They all moved. Each one of the four gouged boards slid away into the chimney wall. I could only imagine them extending out into the chimney itself. There was now enough space in the floor for me to squeeze through. I dropped down, taking the lantern with me, and found myself in a crawl space above the first floor ceiling. Along the outside wall, I came to an opening with a ladder running down to the first floor. I climbed down and found myself in a small pantry at the back of the house. This was the exit from the room of no return. I hurried through the house to the front stairs and went back up. Thad Sloan was sprawled on his back in the hallway, alive but unconscious. He'd been hit on the back of the head. I straightened up and looked around.
I'm sorry that I'll have to kill you, Dr. Sam. I didn't think you'd ever find your way out of that room, but I waited to be sure.
It was only luck that I found the exit from that room.
George Gifford deserved to die.
You needed the beard and hat and coat, probably left over from your carnival days, to disguise your identity. Then you put them on the dead man inside the room to complete the illusion. You escaped through the floorboards, just as I did, replacing them from below as you were leaving.
You know too much.
I haven't quite figured out your motive,
Gifford wanted to buy this place and our farm, too. He wanted to sell shares in some kind of vacation resort.
Go on.
Then he got that Boston reporter to write that story, so the value of the land would fall. When Gifford found out about that ghost hunter fella, he came out again and started threatening us. We were just afraid he'd take away the farm we worked so hard at.
I understand. But why did you take the trouble to lead us to the body at great risk to yourself? We might never have found the secret room.
You think too much, Dr. Sam.
You won't shoot me, Mrs. Andrews. You could plant that firebomb because you wouldn't have to see me die. You haven't killed anyone. It was Billy that killed Gifford, wasn't it?
I killed him.
Whispering up a drain pipe to scare people isn't the sort of thing a mother does, unless her son's told her how to do it. A son who played here and stumbled on the secret room in his childhood. Billy stabbed him with his hunting knife, and Gifford shot Billy through the leg during the struggle. It was your idea to pass it off as a barn accident.
Billy only stabbed him in self-defense. The man had a gun.
Then don't make it any worse for Billy than it already is. Let the jury decide, Mrs. Andrews. Sheriff Lenz is at your house right now, arresting him.
Billy arrested? Oh, no.
It wasn't true, but she didn't know that. The shotgun wavered for just an instant, and that was all I needed. I grabbed it away from her, and she stood there frozen in shock. Oh, yes, it was a terrible case. I almost lost my life twice over, and I did lose my car. Thad Sloan got a bump on the head and went back to Boston without his ghost. The jury gave Billy the benefit of the doubt and only found him guilty of manslaughter. But the trial was too much for his mother, and she died before it was over. And, I went out the following week to pick out a new car. You got time for one more libation? No? Well, come back again sometime, and I'll tell you about another seemingly impossible crime.
Dr. Sam Hawthorne, produced by Dave Amaral, and based on the characters created by Edward D. Hoke, appearing in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Heard in tonight's cast were Jim Harmon as Sheriff Lenz, with Roy Hooper, Charlotte Curry, and Richard Scott as Dr. Sam Hawthorne. This is Robert Lasich.
The Problem of the Whispering House is copyrighted by the estate of Edward D. Hoke. This recording was adapted to make it suitable for podcast by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.